My name's Luke Murtis. I'm Council's Planning Manager. Thanks for attending today's Inner West Local Planning Panel. The Chairman, David Lloyd, will formally open the meeting in a second, but first of all, there's just a few things that I need to say because of the extraordinary circumstances we sort of find ourselves in. So normally the Council staff play a very limited role in these meetings, but because we're holding them over the internet at the moment, you'll notice that the staff are a bit more directly involved. And we're all sort of learning as we go. So we can record the minutes and make sure the meeting goes smoothly. We just need to ask that everybody observes a standard of behaviour, which is probably not too dissimilar to the face-to-face meetings, but there's just a few rules that we'd like to ask everyone to follow. So firstly, it's a recorded public meeting. So just be mindful of your choice of words and what you're wearing and all those sort of things. Try not to talk over each other. Try to just limit it to one person at a time. Mute your microphone when you're done. Staff can also mute your microphone, but we don't want to have to. Be patient and respectful of other speakers, and because we're using audio visual today, that includes visually as well, so don't make rude gestures or anything like that. Try and minimise background disturbance, like noise from children and dogs and things like that. I can personally say that I know how difficult that can be. Make sure you've got good, stable Wi-Fi or phone reception. Just realise that the most important part is the audio. So if you're having trouble with your video, don't worry too much, because the most important part for us recording the minutes and for your input into the meeting is that we can hear you. Just realise too that the last few seconds after you log out or after you leave a call might be audible as well, so just wait for a moment until you have a private conversation. So that's it from me. Staff can assist with technical inquiries and things like sharing plans and that sort of thing. So I'll hand over to the chairman now. So the chairman formally facilitates the meeting and will enforce other more formal meeting procedures, like the limit on the number of speakers and how long you can speak and that sort of thing and what you can present. So please follow the chairman's instructions when you're participating. Thanks, David.
Thank you very much. I'm David Lloyd. I chair this meeting. And it being a public meeting, of the council, I should firstly, on behalf of the council, acknowledge the Gadigal and Wangal people of the Eora Nation, on whose country we are meeting today, and their elders past and present. Next is declarations of interest, and I'm not aware that there are any declarations of interest. It's also appropriate at this stage that the panel members introduce themselves. There are four panel members, each representing a separate interest. We are separate from the council and bring our own independent expertise to bear upon each matter. I'm David Lloyd. In addition to chairing this panel, I also chair a number of other panels. I'm a lawyer. I'm a QC. I'm a former judge of the Land and Environment Court. I'm a former acting judge of the Supreme Court, and I'm presently a professor of law at Western Sydney University. Ms. Tuor.
My name's Annalise Tuor. I have qualifications in architecture and planning. I was previously in a commissioner of the Land and Environment Court, and I'm now on a number of these panels.
Mr. Johnson. Have we lost Mr. Johnson?
David, you're on mute.
Yes. Sorry, I just realised that. My name is David Johnson. I'm an environmental scientist. I have been an environmental consultant most of my life. I'm also a former commissioner with the Planning Assessment Commission, now the Independent Planning Commission. I'm a former acting commissioner in the Land and Environment Court, and I'm also a member of two other local planning panels. Thank you.
Mr. Hawke.
Hello, my name's Ken Hawke. I'm the community representative on the panel. I have been a resident of in the Inner West for over 45 years. I've had a 40-year career in local government planning, and before my retirement, I was the Director of Planning and Environmental Services at Marrickville Council. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, with that, we can move straight on to the agenda and deal with each item in order. The first item on the agenda is the proposed development at 136 Liverpool Road, Ashfield. This comprises a mixed-use building having retail development at ground level fronting Liverpool Road and a six-storey building containing 11 residential units. I can advise that the panel has inspected the site of this development previously. We have the plans, we have the assessment reports and accompanying reports, and we are familiar with what is proposed. We have noticed that there is a number of people who wish to address the panel. I should remind you that those addressing the panel must conform to the protocol which governs these meetings, which says that members of the public may address the panel for up to 3 minutes. Bear in mind also that we do have your written submissions. The first person on my list is Jeff Goodyear. Is Mr. Goodyear here?
Yes, I'm here.
Would you turn up your mic, please? We can barely hear you.
I might have to shout. I think it's as loud as it gets.
All right. Well, as I said, we have your written submission, and you have 3 minutes starting now.
Thank you. My name's Jeff Goodyear. I'm a town planning consultant, and I'm representing the owners of 1-7 Victoria Street, which adjoins the subject site to the rear. I've made a written submission, which you've read. I'll try to cover things quickly. I don't think I'll take more than 3 minutes. The first issue I want to address is that of non-compliance with the apartment design guide with regards to building separation and privacy. So the relevant parts of the apartment design guide are part 2G and part 3F. Together, these parts of the apartment design guide prescribe a 18 metre separation between balconies on the subject side and balconies on 1-7 Victoria Street. The proposal only provides a 13.7 metre separation. The assessment report justifies a variation on the grounds that the balconies that are opposed are to bedrooms. The apartment design guide in this regard requires the separation between balconies to habitable rooms. And when you look at the definition of a habitable room, the first thing it says, it includes a bedroom. Obviously, the apartment design guide contemplates that the separations that are prescribed are necessary to provide satisfactory distances to maintain privacy between residents, whether or not it's a bedroom. There are no constraints on this site that would prevent a compliance in this regard. It's just that the applicant seeks to maximise their development potential by pushing closer to the residents at 1-7 Victoria Street to their detriment because they have a loss of privacy as a result of that. And there's also a reduction in the building separation, which provide other environmental benefits in terms of visual impacts, etc. With regards to traffic and parking, there are a number of issues. One is that a car hoist is proposed. Council's engineers have recommended that the car hoist not be approved. The concerns relate to the potential for mechanical faults to occur with car hoists. They seem to fail at the time when they're most needed. And my understanding is the council has a general policy of not permitting car hoists. Notwithstanding that, the recommendation is to permit the car hoist and to approve that element of the development. There's a particular concern with regards to access into and out of the proposed car parking area through number 1-7 Victoria. The location of a car wash bay directly adjacent to where vehicles would swing in and out of the subject site. The issue here is not whether or not there is sufficient room to swing a car around. You could swing a car around so long as there's not a car coming the other way, because there's insufficient room for vehicles to pass each other. So that's one problem. The sight lines are constrained because it's on a bend, and there will be people in the car wash bay who are at danger of vehicles moving past them in that location where it's narrow. Another concern is with regards to loading and unloading of vehicles related to the retail commercial space. There's no loading or unloading bay provided within the basement area. Loading and unloading would have to take place from Liverpool Road, which is a classified road, and I think that causes a traffic issue that hasn't been addressed properly. The proposal also includes works on the right-of-way in 1-7 Victoria Street. Apparently 1-7 Victoria Street wasn't completed in accordance with the approved plans, which makes me consider that there must be some unauthorised element of that development, because there's currently no access into the subject site, 136 Liverpool Road. So I don't know that the issue of whether or not there's unauthorised works and how those can be resolved has been addressed in the planning report. The planning report makes a recommendation in this regard to have a deferred commencement condition requiring some certification of the structural integrity of the works that are proposed to provide that vehicular access. My concern is that the residents of 1-7 Victoria Street are not included in that condition in any way. In other words, they're disenfranchised by works that are being proposed on their own land. I would have thought that perhaps it would be appropriate that if there is any structural integrity report to be required, that the residents of 1-7 Victoria Street have the opportunity to review that, to peer review it, and to make a submission to council in that regard prior to council determining whether or not the deferred commencement condition has been satisfied. Those are all the issues that I wanted to cover. I've covered them as quickly as I can. I think I'm within my 3 minutes, but if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
All right, I'll ask the panel. Do panel members have any questions of Mr. Goodyear?
No.
None?
No.
None. All right. Thank you, Mr. Goodyear.
Thank you very much.
No one wants to ask you any questions. All right. So the next person on my list is Michael Williams. Is Michael Williams there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
As I said before, as a member of the public, you have 3 minutes, starting now.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity. I wish to support everything that Mr. Goodyear said, and you've seen my submissions and they cover a range of similar kinds of issues. What I'll concentrate on now, though, is simply the traffic flow. I'm a resident at 1-7 Victoria Street, and of course use the car park and use the entrance and driveway to get into Victoria Street back and forth. And it's quite obvious that putting in an access through on the side there near the car wash bay will make the car wash bay unusable. It'll be a danger to anybody using it at any time. In addition, the driveway, although it is wide enough for two cars, it's only barely wide enough for two cars. And so as you come in and out, you're constantly having to back and get over to the side if you happen to meet someone coming the other way. And so when you add a third entranceway to that driveway, it's inevitable you're going to get a lot of congestion coming through. And then if you add a hoist to that, and a hoist which will periodically break down, as Mr. Goodyear said, you're going to have people lined up, people who are stuck because they can't get into their car park, and that'll simply exacerbate the problem as far as 1-7 is concerned. Then you have the access to Victoria Street. In the traffic report that I've seen, it seems a ludicrous traffic report. Basically, it takes into no account how busy Victoria Street is at peak hour, going in and out along Victoria Street, adding where it enters to Liverpool Road. So it's a small traffic light with a very short window. And so the traffic is often back two blocks right back up Victoria Street. And we, as we come in and out, have to take that into account as we drive in and out of 1 to 7. So if you add another residential flow of traffic into that, you're only exacerbating the problem. And the traffic report simply skirts all that. I remember the original Roads and Maritime report questioned that. The traffic consultant simply dismisses it without taking into account. But in reality, the traffic congestion is quite heavy, and this will only be exacerbated by this overdevelopment on this site. The other thing is, of course, it's going to have some commercial units in that proposal. And again, as I say, Liverpool Road is very busy, so inevitably some of the loading will come along, and they'll try and get in through the driveway at the back, which isn't accessible to any kind of large commercial deliveries. And so that'll be blocking. What tends to happen when a truck needs to deliver it now, they, of course, stop at the top of the driveway and load from there. And presumably this will happen with some of the commercial development there, because it's just impossible for them to use Liverpool Road to deliver anything to those retail outlets. Yes, I think that's pretty well covered. That's the main thing I wanted to focus on, that really the traffic flow and congestion will be just make it impossible, and that the traffic consultancy in the reports simply don't mesh with any kind of reality. Well, thank you very much for your opportunity.
Thank you. All silent, all done, all right. Thank you very much, Mr. Williams.
Thank you.
We'll take on board what you've said when we consider the matter later. The next person on my list is Robert Carnell. Is Mr. Carnell here?
Yes, sir, I'm here. Do you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you and I can see you.
Thank you. Shall I take off?
Your 3 minutes starts now.
Thank you, sir. I'm a long-term resident of Ashfield. In fact, I've been a ratepayer here for more than 40 years. And I'd like to highlight some of the non-compliant issues in this development. The proposed development has got several impacts to our property, in particular, airflow, solar access, privacy, safety, and serenity, I guess, of our property. The proposed developer is going to directly and significantly affect our lives as we know it. As you know, the community doesn't really want this development. They've received more than 19 individual submissions against it and a petition as well. We don't believe that the developer's right of profit outweighs the right of our amenities. In particular, we'd like to point out the fact about the height of the building. It is 700 millimetres over the maximum height of 2300. And we just believe this should not be not be in any way negotiable, because it faces directly into our balcony and our bedroom. We're on the fourth level here. Secondly, there's non-compliance and separation with both setback from Liverpool Road and also separation to our balconies. The separation they're suggesting is way under the what's required. I believe it's only 7.5 metres setback and only 13.7 separation to our property instead of 18, which it should be in the plan. So it's disregarded the impact on us and also on some other houses as far as shadow on 19 and 21 Norton Street as well. When we bought our property, we were not aware that there was a right of carriageway on our driveway. In fact, this was done after we had exchanged contracts. So we feel a little bit peeved in that area, but not a lot we can do. But we believe the inadequate setback of a building would overbear a bulk and scale of our building. The proposed distance of 13.7 is insufficient, and with the direct view looking into our bedroom. Our balcony is the best feature of our apartment, and we spend a lot of time in the open space there, and the natural sunlight, exercising, and that sort of thing with family and friends. We enjoy the sense of sky, space, breeze, light, and treetops, and the very good view. It will destroy our privacy and freedom in our own home, making us feel very uncomfortable and on display to everyone. The DA has significant impact on us. Instead of looking at the treetops, we'll see a bulky building and we'll lose all our view towards Homebush and Concord. We believe there are safety concerns, in particular with regard to the car hoist, as was previously mentioned. And I think it was also not mentioned that that the additional traffic on Victoria Street is liable to affect the police station and fire station, which are also opposite our property. I think I just made the 3 minutes.
Well, that was very efficient. Thank you. Thank you for that, Mr. Carnell. The next person on the list that I have is Yiji Louis.
Hello, this is EJ here, so I can start now.
Yes, you proceed.
Okay, so actually the three gentlemen here already addressed the main things here, all the concerns for all the residents around this area. I just want to add in a few more things. One is, I'm not sure if anyone is actually count how many cars can pass when the traffic lights turn green for the right turn from Victoria Street to the Liverpool Road. I actually did the count last weekend. So basically every time when the lights turn green, there's only two or three cars can turn right. So imagine if it's the peak time, the traffic out of in and out of the car park will be a problem, a big problem for all the residents in this building, Victoria 127. And this will be the ongoing issues moving forward. Another thing is, like the other gentleman mentioned, there's a petrol station just in front of our buildings and a police station just across the road. So there will be a concern of, in case there's a fire, the security issues is a big concern to us. With all these traffics and the potential security risks, it's big things. I think everyone needs to take into the consideration when approve this kind of application. And also, there's few non-compliance issues in regards to of this proposal. And I believe in the proposal they mentioned there's a minimal impact, but doesn't matter how many units and how many residential will be impacted. If it's non-compliant by the council's regulation or criteria, there's a must have a stop or change of the plan. Everyone's right, all the units' right needs to be respected and protected. Another thing is the shared off driveway. I'm not sure if anyone has noticed this rubbish being located just near the 127 Victoria Road entry, the car park entries. So a lot of people, residents actually use the stairs around their areas to get access to the rubbish bin room. And the visibility of those pedestrians and cars is not very good. Consider if there's a three ways traffic, there's a potential risk to the people that use the access. This is the few things I want to add and concerns. Is there any questions for me?
Any questions, panel?
I have no questions, no.
All right. No one else is responding. So thank you for that. We will move on to the next person who wishes to speak, Santo Carlini.
Hello, Mr. Lloyd. I've got a town planner to represent me, Mr. Andrew Martin, and he'll be taking over from me.
All right. Well, we'll hear from Mr. Martin.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, panel. My submission, Andrew Martin, town planner for Mr. Carlini, and their interests are at 138 to 158 Liverpool Road, in Ashfield. So thank you for hearing from us.
I should remind you that we have your 11-page written submission.
Thank you, Chairman. My submission is really in relation to the conditions of consent, which we believe fall short of the mark. And I'll be pointing those out to the panel and I'll be numbering them. And I'll start with number 27. And thank you for considering those submissions as well under our written submission. But in relation to this submission, it's through the panel, it's in relation to condition 27, 28, 29, and two suggest the conditions which we believe deal with gaps in the conditions. So in relation to 27, I could take you to every page, but what we would say in relation to 27, which deals with car park, traffic management.
It's on page 11, panel.
Page 11. But maybe if I go to every page and take you through them, I might chew into my 3 minutes. But if I just articulate what the issues are, then we can maybe come back to it. So page 11 is condition 27 in relation to construction traffic management plan. I think the panel would agree that this is a constrained site. It won't have a lot of area to construct the building, and they'll be relying on there's a no stopping sign and on Liverpool Road. So it makes it a little bit difficult. So what we want integrated into 27 is specific conditions that say no parking, because my client has a super cheap auto, quite a number of high profile retail tenants in his buildings, and therefore we would like to make sure that there's a condition that says no parking at any time for any tradespeople in relation to the construction of this development at 138 to 158 Liverpool Road. So a specific note for that. We also would like to point out that we wouldn't like any construction that was blocking or machinery that's blocking the facade of our building, which is obviously, again, a retail tenant that needs that maintained. So 27 to be upgraded to include a few more details about not parking and obstructing 138 to 158 Liverpool Road. In relation to number 28, that deals with the dilapidation report. And I think what we'd like there is the same language in reference to the certified practicing structural engineers to be transferred from number 33, the same language put into number 28, because it's silent on the type of person. It just says someone with suitable experience. I think you'll see language in 33 needs to be replicated in 28. The other issue for 28 is that we would like that dilapidation report. There's no checks and balances on the dilapidation report. It's just the adjoining owner has the will to review these documents. Our client definitely does and would like the opportunity to be given for 21 days for 28 days review of a dilapidation report after receipt and posting of that report to my client's address by registered mail, similar to something that Woollahra adopts. I think there's some really strict conditions about dilapidation reports, because we'd really like to see what their engineer is saying about our client's property and make sure it's accurate, that's all. So 28 to be upgraded with a provide to the adjoining landowner at 138 to 158 for professional review, and allow 21 or 28 days for that professional review to occur once they've sent it by a registered certified mail to my client's mailing address. In relation to 29, we ask that there will be a construction management plan for the excavation, and we would ask that instead of 7 days notice, we've got retail tenants joining the site, we'd ask for 21 days notice. And within number 29, we believe that all of the structural engineering particulars as to how they're going to build their basement should be provided to our client to satisfy condition number 29 in the form of a construction management plan, because it doesn't actually specify what type of information should be provided in 29. So 27's covered, 28's covered, 29's covered. They're all embellishment of the existing conditions. Then about an additional condition, in relation to the retention and of signage, I've looked at page 77 of the report before you. It doesn't show that our client's super cheap signage is over the boundary. So we just want that I think we'd have to have a condition that talked about an agreement or some sort of discussion, but that just should be returned to our client. It's not shown over the boundary. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, but something about signage. If that sign is to be obviously to be covered up, then if it's on our property, then we need some sort of reciprocal agreement to get that sign down and whatever the case is. In relation to
that's 3 minutes, Andrew.
Okay. I had a comment about rubbish, and that was the only thing about the rubbish collection. It's a no-stop zone and how that was going to occur.
If you've only got one more comment, I'll hear you.
I do. It was in relation to, how the front facade is to be, the detail for the front facade and how that abuts the new building. So I don't think there's any specific detail, but I think that joint or that how it clips to our client's front facade is very important, and they would want it to look neat and so would council. So it's just really provide a condition that says provide a detail for how the front facade of our building abuts the neighbouring building with a nice detail. So it's nice and flush and it looks like it's supposed to be there. Thank you for the extra time.
All right, before you go, any questions from the panel? Any questions?
No.
No? No response. All right, thank you very much for that.
I've just got one question, just in relation to the sign that you mentioned. That's the one that's on the side of your property, is it?
Yes, it is.
And you're asking that it not be covered up?
No.
Well, I think if it's approved, then it would be covered up. But I think we were just interested to see how that could be resolved by taking the sheet of panelling out of the sign before it's covered up. But it doesn't show that it's over the property boundary. But so we're just interested to see what the panel's thoughts were on that. Is anyone's got a smart solution as to how that could be handled?
And you don't know whether that sign is actually on your property or overhanging the adjoining property?
Well, on page 77, I just got this, over the weekend, this report, but 77, page 77 doesn't show an encroachment. I think there's a survey with a bundle of documents. It doesn't show that it's encroached. So if it doesn't encroach, I guess then it's up to us to take it down. But it was just something to point out. That's all.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
There is a survey on page 76. It doesn't appear to show any encroachment. So I assume that the sign is on your own property. You agree with that, Mr.
Martin?
Yes, that's fine. Sorry, my mute button was disappearing on me.
So you've seen the survey. It doesn't show any encroachment, so it seems that the sign is wholly on your own property. Do you agree with that? You have to turn on your mic. We're not hearing you. You have to turn on your mic.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Thank you. Yes. Okay. I agree. Good.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. We can now hear from the applicant, Glenn McCormack or Margaret Roberts, who wishes to go first.
Good afternoon, panel. This is Margaret Roberts, the town planning consultant.
Yes.
We've read the report. We have no issues with the report, and we would respectfully request that the panel adopts the recommendation. However, Glenn and I are available for questions if the panel does have specific questions.
Does Mr. McCormack wish to say anything?
I'm pretty much endorsing what Margaret has just said. We're happy with the report. We're content with the report. There's a number of issues that have been raised this afternoon. I'm happy to speak to some of those if the panel wants some clarification, some balance. But I'll put it back to the panel members to answer some of those questions if need be.
Well, I'd like to hear how you would deal with some of the issues raised by those who've spoken earlier, particularly regarding things like dilapidation reports and the like being served on the adjoining owners. What do you say about that?
We have no objection to sharing the information with the neighbouring owners. Dilapidation reports are as important to the applicant as they are to the neighbours. They're somewhat of an insurance policy to protect both parties or all parties. So we have no reason to withhold that from the neighbours. That information inadvertently goes to the council anyway through either council as the PCA or even a private certifier. It's public record, but we're happy to converse directly with the neighbours. So I'm happy for the conditions to be altered along those lines.
All right. Any questions from the panel?
So did you just want to briefly respond to the issues that were raised by the objectors as well in relation to 1-7 Victoria Road?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that, panel member. I've got a quick sheet here of notes as we've been going through this agenda item. In terms of building separation, in terms of ADG compliance, the ADG requirements for building separation are not simply 18 metres. I think the panel members would know that the building separation ranges from 12 metres to 18 metres. And the ADG also goes on to confirm through a number of diagrams in the ADG, namely figures 3F.3 and 3F.4, that our requirement for that overall building separation is shared. Now, for the for the lower floors of this particular development, we actually exceed the 6-metre requirement by having a setback to our balconies around 7 to 7.5 metres. Once we get to the upper stories, our setback is just in excess of 9 metres, which actually takes us beyond our commitment and our responsibilities under the ADG. In terms of the right of way, we have confirmed with council through the DA process that our site does have a legal right to have access across number 1-7 Victoria Street. We have actually, through documents received by our office, note that the approval of that neighbouring building, number 1-7, does actually clearly indicate that that development should maintain the ability to have vehicles access this particular site via the basement of this neighbouring property. And I might also add that that DA-approved scheme does actually include the car wash bay that a number of the residents actually mentioned. I can't speak to whether the building was actually executed in accordance with the consent. So we're content with the fact that the council has asked for a deferred commencement, so that we can do our proper investigations with the neighbour. But this owner does have a right of a carriageway in and out of our site via this neighbouring property. In terms of the car hoist, to my knowledge, there hasn't been a specific feedback from council's engineers to say that we can't have the hoist. It's not desirable, and that's always the case when we have sites of fairly modest dimensions. But the car hoist is in a location so that any queuing that's likely is going to happen within our site and unlikely to disturb the use of the neighbouring property owners. In terms of we can't get access off Liverpool Road. The infrastructure set pretty much outlaws that. We do have a legal right through the back of the property, and that's what we're relying on. The conditions of consent were the ones suggested by Mr. Martin. We're happy to abide by those recommendations. Although I might also add, just on balance, that we are not held up by the neighbour either. I mean, we're happy to cooperate with the neighbour and provide that information within a timely fashion, but there has to be some sort of checks and balances to make sure that the construction certificate isn't withheld or suspended because we're relying on feedback from a neighbour. In terms of the signage, to the best of my knowledge, the sign is not encroaching on the boundary, but because we're happy to communicate with the neighbouring property owners, I'm sure we can enter into dialogue with that neighbour to rescue that that sign if they so desire.
All right. Any other questions from the panel?
No.
No? No? All right. Well, thank you very much. What the panel will do is we will consider what's been put to us after the end of the public meeting. And in the interim, we will proceed with the other items on the agenda in the public meeting, which will mean that you will receive notice of our determination in due course after the public meeting has concluded. So thank you again for your attendance. And with that, we can move on to item two. Item two is the proposed modification of a development consent at 731 to 735 Darling Street, Roselle. This is on the corner of Cambridge Street. And I think we have Chris Webster who wishes to speak. It's Chris Webster there, please. Is Chris Webster there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear someone. Is that Chris Webster?
Yeah, it's Chris Webster here. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
All right. You proceed, Mr. Webster.
Sure. Okay, well, thanks for your time. So we're the applicant for this application. Hopefully you've got a copy of our one-page submission letter with you. So generally we support the recommendation for approval. We just had three comments on the proposed amendments to the development consent conditions. So just to run through those, and these are in line with our letter submission. The first comment is a timing issue. So the amended consent conditions incorporate a number of new conditions, a lot of which aren't actually related to the changes in the section 456. The timing issue is that we've actually already had a construction certificate issued for the development, and we're in demolition phase at the moment. So there's one condition in particular, an amendment to condition number 20, which requires that new condition to be satisfied prior to the issue of any construction certificate. Given we've already had a construction certificate issued and we've already commenced the development, we're looking to change that wording to prior to the issue of a construction certificate, just to reflect that timing issue. The second comment is in relation to, again, a new condition, consent condition 60A, which refers to a plan reference which we believe is incorrect. The plan referenced in this new condition doesn't seem to be related to this project, so I'm not sure where that reference has come from. And then the third comment we have, in the proposed amendments to the development consent conditions, there has been a lot of new conditions added into the development consent, many of which don't relate to the changes in the section 456. So the changes in the section 456 basically related to layout and number of retail shops on the ground floor and the colour of the facade. But these proposed amendments to the consent conditions include additional requirements regarding stormwater, vehicle access, geotechnical works, public domain works, dilapidation reports, car wash bays, street curbs and so on. So our issue with this is that this consent was initially issued through the courts. The consent conditions to be honest, was something which were debated and negotiated at length during that court process. And we feel that these are new conditions which impose additional works and additional complexities on the project that weren't approved through the court process. So we ask that these conditions are removed and only changes that relate to the section 456 are incorporated in the consent conditions. So our letter submissions outlines which conditions they are. There's about a dozen or so of these new conditions.
Any questions?
And that's all we've got to say.
All right. Any questions from the panel?
Yes. Can you just expand on why you say those conditions don't relate to the development, given that you are making changes to the ground floor and the floor levels, et cetera?
Yeah, sure. So the changes that we're making are to the slab levels of the retail shops and the number of shops. The floor area doesn't change. And then also to the colour of the facade. These new conditions cover stormwater, geotechnical matters, vehicle access, driveway matters, extent of public domain upgrades, additional dilapidation reports, additional requirements for a car wash bay, further requirements on stormwater, requirements for street curbs, and requirements for restrictions on title for positive covenants. So generally relating to stormwater and works within the street, none of those have been affected by these section 456 changes.
Any other questions, panel? No? All right.
Perhaps could we, just if we can ask the council officer just...